Welcome to the Boltus on 3CR 8:55 AM on Thursday, the 12th of September. The boldness is about standing up for your disability rights instead of waiting for some well-meaning person to give them to you. My name is Rafael Caleb, and we've got a very special person today. We are talking with Kath Duncan. How are you today?
Hey, Raf, I'm great. How's it going?
I am absolutely sensational. And we are talking about specials. That's your latest production.
It's all to say, our big regional festival across Australia, New Zealand and the Asia Pacific. So specials this year is part of Alter State, which is every 2 years. So I think they had a gap because of COVID. So yeah, we're on at Arts House, for some showings in October. So, you know, the countdown is on, but yeah, so we were lucky enough to get the Warehouse Residency, which is a program that Arts House runs specifically for, you know, deaf and disabled productions of one sort or another, you know, everything from visual arts through to music and, you know, dance and all the rest of it, whereas this is a theatre piece.
Specials, it's about the rage about the schools that were happening 60s, 70s, 80s, and that ableistic attitude of segregation. What's it like to get your own back at what happened?
Well, you're exactly right. A lot of it is about revenge and payback. It's fabulous. So the full work itself won't be seen in October. It's this sort of short version. It's like a development, you know, showcasing some highlights and all. So I'm not going to reveal what actually happens in the full length piece, but revenge, it happens. And so in the short version, we hint at what's going to happen. It feels fantastic because one of the feelings that's really, you know, felt across the board from all of us that went through special ed, you know, then and now, is the feeling of helplessness, powerlessness, and not being heard. I've been talking about certain sort of iconic moments in the time I was at special school between the ages of 3 and 9, and I talk about how a really prevailing image for me is of a young child tied to a toilet and crying. And I remember seeing this child who was a bit younger than me. I was probably only about 6 at the time, but the kid might have been only just 4 or 5, something like that, and not being able to help because I knew if I helped, I'd get in trouble. And it's that thing about staring at someone who's in trouble and they're crying and you become part of that thing because you can't stop it. So I lingered. I've held onto that feeling of, you know, helplessness and powerlessness for 50 plus years now. And now is the time to let it all out. So that's what we're doing. So I started working on it as a piece of research. It was a PhD research. During the process of looking at special ed, I worked out that feeling about powerlessness was actually quite systemic. And it went all the way from the local area right through to the federal government and beyond in Australia during the 60s and 70s. And as of 2006, so it could change since, but the last time I looked at this, special ed in Australia has no curriculum. You don't have to teach anything. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, individual schools, institutions, et cetera, don't come up with something, but there's no federal, unlike every other sort of education, there are no laws that say what you really must teach, what your outcomes must be. And I still find that outrageous.
Right. Well, that's going to tease this out a fair bit. So it sounds like people in special education and what is considered mainstream education, it's not only a different curriculum, which appears that special education didn't have a curriculum, but it, like I said, the segregation of being treated very, very, very differently. And how does that affect people's expectations, their growth and their ambitions?
It has an incredibly negative effect on the feelings about your life ahead of you. Well, it certainly did for me. And at the time I was at special ed, which was between like just across the 60s, really, I escaped by the time I was it was 1969 by the time I escaped. And it really was like breaking out of prison. Like if you can understand, like my school had an underground entrance. So you had to go, the taxi cab would take us there underground to check in. So you couldn't get back out that way. And at the back of the place, there was this tiny yard with barbed wire strung along the fence. So we're effectively sort of locked in. And of course, you know this. And particularly those of us attending a place with siblings, because my sister and brother went to a very different place that was absolutely gorgeous. I ended up there, at just the local primary school, just very ordinary primary school. But to me, it was heaven in comparison to this jail cell I'd been locked in.
In a nutshell, from the way you described it, by going into an underground car park to get into an actual school where basically the boundary or the fenced line barbed wire, with any armed guard there as well to make sure you couldn't escape. That's a big difference between that and I think what would happen in a mainstream school.
Yeah, well, at my sibling's school, the front just opened out. It was all on the one level. The front just opened out and just people, kids, adults, teachers, et cetera, just sort of like walked in. But the best thing about the school I ended up going to as a mainstream primary school, which in those days we called normal school, with no shred of irony, about that. But anyway, it emptied out into fields. Like at the back of that school, it just wandered off into fields. And oh, mind you, this was a long time ago. I doubt whether that school still does. But back in the day, you could just wander out the back and just keep wandering. And the fact that as well, from the school I ended up with, I only lived about, not quite 3K from the school, whereas the one that the taxi took me to, there was no escape. That it wasn't my area. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't my local area and I was just a kid. So it was, very much like being trapped and punished for being us. And most of the time, I mean, when I look back on it, I think, why were we there? And one of my interviewees asked that question of one of the teachers there. She said, why am I here? And the teacher said, because you can't go up and down steps and you can't go to the toilet on your own. And she remembers thinking that they're just small things to prevent me having an equal education with my sister.
Yeah, well, this is actually kind of the thing which is actually would be absolutely wonderful for the Disability Royal Commission submissions, which very few of those recommendations have been adopted.
Exactly. But
these are the stories that actually need to be told. So really spelling this out, that as far as I can work out, if I was allowed to think because I have a disability, it's really along the lines of that many people who are creative do identify with having a disability, and this is a way to actually use their art to educate others about what has actually happened in the community, the stories that need to be told so they don't get suppressed, such as, let's say, First Nations, Indigenous culture. These stories need to be told. They are part of Australia's part of that 60s, 70s of isolation.
Yeah, well, and, this un-isolating process is actually taking a lot longer than any of us would have hoped in general. I mean, if you go to any library now and just look up special education, you will find a slew, like hundreds, of references, all written by people who didn't attend special ed as a student, all about our problem behaviours and our problem lives. In fact, I remember finding because I've done quite the academic search and all this as well, finding others also saying, where are the children's experiences? Where are the students' experiences? They're really hard to find. In my search, my bibliography for my original PhD thing and then since is just, it's mega. I grab everything I can. And I found, I think, 3 single line quotes from students in all of that about special ed.
That very famous poem by Laura Hershey really comes to mind. Nothing about us without us, and it didn't take place. And it has actually been further compounded in, we're going to put a very hypothetical question in there, Kath, which is quite ironical. If there had been something like the National Disability Insurance Scheme, similar to Medicare in the 60s and 70s, would that have actually made a difference to people with a disability at that time? And if you allow another question after you answer that about the National Disability Insurance Scheme.
Welcome back to The Boldness on 3CR 855 AM, where we are talking with Kat Duncan about the show Special Out of School, which is showing at the Alter State Festival.
I think one of the issues is that it's like this big systemic issue around the fact that for a lot of parents who suddenly, in my case, I was born with my disabilities, and most of the kids in the special school system have got congenital, you know, differences or something that arrived, you know, not long after. So my parents, because they were really unfamiliar with, you know, limbless kids, just took on the medical apparatus's framework for what we should all do, you know, because I remember my mum saying to me when I was quite young, oh, isn't it fabulous? You know, the special ed people said to your father and me, Kath, they said, you know, we'll have her until her leaving certificate, which in those days was when you were 16. And then she can work in one of our workshops, taken care of for life. And that seemed like a good thing to them. And I think that can be the problem, that even if you've got all the money in the world to throw at it, and let's face it, none of us do, but even with all of that, you've still got the problem of coming up against this enormous apparatus about how disabled people should be dealt with. And how we should be shunted. And of course, you know, when a kid is a kid, you don't have the wherewithal to say, I really hate this place. This is really terrible. Though eventually I did. By the time I was about 8, I was in open rebellion and just, it was really kind of difficult actually, because to get out of there, to be honest, and it's one of the reasons why I've made the play specials, to get out of there, you effectively had to treat the other disabled kids like they were trash. So in my case, because, you know, I'm a smart kid, I'm pretty quick on the uptake, I worked out that if I looked smarter than everybody else, that eventually I would get out of there. Because there's no other way of getting out of there. You can't climb over the barbed wire and run out the other way past the taxis and all the rest. So the only way to get out of there is to play the system. And so I worked out really young, but it scarred me for life. Because after that, I thought all disabled people were jailed, were being punished right now, like I'd been, and I daren't even stand next to one because it would make me look more disabled. I was really, you know, twisted. And it wasn't until I was in my early 20s when I first started meeting cool disabled people that I realized that that wasn't the case, that that was a thing that happened to me. It wasn't a thing that should be happening to anyone. But it's been really difficult to break out of that mindset of, my life is punishment. It'll be like this forever. The only way, you know, like in jail, people start to scrap and steal each other's food and push each other. It was like that to get out of there. So,
well,
yeah.
Well, I said, Kath, I'm going to disclose to listeners, I've actually known Kath in real life for quite a considerable time. I reckon it's at least 10 years.
And I
find it very difficult to imagine you of being anything but a rebel, because you come through and there's the fire there. But these are the experiences that actually help shape and influence people. And in terms of where it comes down to the reference of the National Disability Insurance Scheme, I've specifically raised it because of the difference that the rest of the community, in the same way that there was special schools versus normal education, there was Medicare for the rest of the population, but there wasn't anything there for people who actually had a disability, such as the National Disability Insurance Scheme. So a systematic suppression of what people with a disability could do. And the reason I've raised that is because there's been the report released about the National Disability Insurance Scheme, where I think it's 12 of the 211 proposals have been accepted and ratified. Is this actually a step towards dismantling the National Disability Insurance Scheme so that they introduce things like special schools, segregation, to keep people with a disability in their place?
Well, unfortunately, special ed is still with us. It's these days, you know, special torture centres for autistic kids and kids with problem behaviours. you know, that we don't bother to look into. Let's just throw a pile of drugs at it and put them in jail, you know. So your question about the NDIS, which also intersects with the lack of adoption of the Royal Commission into the, I think it was the abuse and exploitation of people with disabilities. It's quite a long title. So in a way, those two bits of news have kind of arrived at a very poor time for most of us. I mean, you know, the excuse the government uses is, you know, the NDIS has blown out way beyond what they thought. But if anyone can remember back to the early noughties, there was a report released, I think around 2003, but I could be wrong about that. Could have been a bit later, called the Unmet Need Report. And it was reports like that that led to the NDIS. Because what they discovered was that families and, you know, organisations and so forth were putting in millions into just keeping a whole lot of disabled children and adults alive. And that it's that from that, that model that showed how well below subsistence levels disabled people were held at is one of the reasons why we have the NDIS. We talked about the Unmet Need Report for a decade before we had any action whatsoever, the way that I remember it. Right now, I don't think anyone should be surprised, maybe, that these have been cut back. But it's really, it's very disheartening how when we think we've achieved something that we think now is going to change our lives and the lives of other deaf and disabled people to come after us, to watch it actually potentially, oh, look, I'm not saying it's going to go away completely, but to watch it be, you know, dismembered within, God, it's within 10 years, isn't it? I mean, it less than, I can't remember when NDIS started, because it started in different stages all over the country.
You've got to remember that people with a disability are very, very special, is that we apparently don't need money because we're so inspirational. We don't get paid in the different types of rates as what other people do, because apparently we need to inspire others to keep us in the style that we're accustomed to, which is with nothing. Now, seriously,
because we're going to go
with this part of specials, it sounds like there's a lot of material that you could actually put into specials. So without giving it anything away, and I don't have complete inside information, I'd like to think there should be a TV series, maybe something like Neighbours, an online thing of this is what it was like, because there's no shortage of material. How would that feel if you got to produce something like that, hypothetically?
It's funny you should say that, because at the moment I'm thinking about a love story set right now between two disabled people who are about to move in together. They're taking that big move. But one is going to give evidence at the Royal Commission into CSA, and the other one is going to give evidence at the Disability Royal Commission, and they're going to argue over which is the better ground, you know, to give evidence at why the NDIS crumbles around them. That's my latest idea for sort of, and I would love to do that as a TV series. I would just love that. But for specials, what we're thinking about for specials, because I'm working with the fabulous producer, Veronica Pardo. Everyone wants Veronica as a producer. Just, I don't know how to explain her, but she's quite amazing. But anyway, we want to take specials to bigger stages next year and go with the full show, which is probably about an hour and a quarter, whereas the one we're putting on in October for Alter State is about 35 minutes, I think. So about half, you know? And that's what we'd really like to do with it. Do I want to work with the material like that in another form? Sort of. I'm a bit of one of those, I'm a bit of a dilettante. Like I do a thing and I go, right, done that. That's done. I'm over with that. And I was thinking the other day, you know, I'd love to sell, specials as a script to somebody else to get them to do all this, because it's just been hell. I mean, that thing about, you know, when you're pulling a play together and you're the writer, but I'm also sort of a bit the producer, but handing some of that over. I'm sort of also the director and about to hand that over. It's a really full load and you get quite removed from the actual story. In fact, it's interviews like this that make me remember why I'm doing this. You know what I mean? So maybe specials could become a series. I'd like somebody else to do that. But I'm really interested in this kind of love story about this couple who are going to bicker over which one has the better Royal Commission and the outcomes of that. Oh, and both matters, both matters that they're complaining about, are both disability-based matters. So the CSA Royal Commission idea is also to do with disability. Long story, which I'm not going to go into, obviously. But, yeah, so next idea, I'm all for it. But in the meantime, yeah, we're getting – how far are we out with five? A month out from putting the show on and sort of I don't know about everyone else, but I'm feeling the pressure.
Kathy is feeling the pressure. And it's probably now it's time to start really wrapping it up pretty quickly, Kath. Now,
rightio.
When is specials showing, how to get tickets and all that all that stuff which we really need to mention, Kath?
Right. So I'm just going to break it to you. We're sold out. Sorry, guys. So, yeah, I know this is what we're meant to do at the end of interviews like this. We're meant to go, oh, you know, log on to la 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 and get tickets. Very cheap, very reasonable, great tickets, great seats. But no, we've already sold out. In fact, we're sold out within, I don't know, 48 hours of going online. We're sold out.
Oh, so you're completely sold out?
I'm afraid so.
Put it this way. You can at least reference the boldness on your next submission when you need to get a grant. Look, at least we thought of specials, but it will be absolutely wonderful. And this is the type of thing that some of those influential people in politics, maybe they will listen to boldness and say, this is why we need to keep funding the NDIS, keep funding the arts, and keep Theatre Network Australia in that loop where people with disability are underrepresented in the arts. Thank you very much for your time, Kath. It's great to have you on The Boldness on 3CR 855.
The Boldness has been talking with Kath Duncan about her show, Specials Out of School, which is about the special education system in the 60s, 70s and 80s. It's going to be a fantastic performance. It's part of the Alter State Festival. Next Thursday, the 10th of October, The Boldness will be back continuing the Melbourne Fringe special. We're having a great time highlighting all the great work performers who identify with having a disability are doing. Keep listening to 3CR 855 AM. We're going to finish with a very apt song by Love Hate Rebellion called Better. Thank you for joining me today.